This is your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Our topic is landlord-tenant, national Airbnb, and subsidized housing laws, disputes, and issues. My guests are Jessica Chilek, landlord-tenant attorney with office in San Francisco, and Tad Devlin, business and sharing economy attorney and partner in the San Francisco law firm of Kaufman, Dolowich, and Volokh. And funding for this program is made possible by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Additional funding is provided by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. We are doing this program on November 30th. And what we're going to do is we're doing this live program. For those of you who are listening to the live program, let me give you the toll-free number in case you'd like to talk to my guests off the air. What am I saying? It's toll-free 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And we'll be taking calls on the air in just a few minutes. It's also our regular Call a Lawyer night, which we do on a monthly basis. For attorneys in the studio here, KLW, the number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. We have here at the station Jeff Hayden, chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization for Criminal Law, for Tax Law, Real Estate, and he's also a real estate broker, Frank Adam. And I think that Ron Rohde's here for Patent Law, Aviation Law, Lemon Law, BBB Arbitration. That number, 1-800-525-9917. They're here to talk with you off the air until 8 p.m. California time tonight on November 30th. All right, Jessica, if you would do this. We talked about off the air. We talked about subletting being a kind of a problem, certainly in San Francisco. I'm sure it's not just in San Francisco. It could be anywhere in the state of California or perhaps anywhere in the United States. What are some of the issues involved? And by the way, Tad, are you there?
Chuck, yeah.
Thanks. Oh, you sound good. Okay, we'll get to you, Tad, in just a couple of minutes or so.
No problem.
Well, on the subletting issue, you know, in most of the state, it is allowed by state law unless your rental agreement or lease prohibits it. Now, if you're in a rent-controlled jurisdiction or an area that has local control on subletting, it can be an issue. In the fact that if you rent an apartment that has, say, three bedrooms with two other people and they're on the lease and they leave for whatever reason, end of the school year or whatever, whether you can replace those people and become a master tenant or whether the landlord has to replace them, you know, and their co-tenants with you is different. And most of the time it's required that you get, you know, if you're going to fill those spaces, then you need to have the landlord vet them. You basically submit application papers, you know, credit check papers.
To the landlord,
the potential subtenant.
Uh-huh.
And it's best to have a written subtenancy agreement, you know, if you have...
Which is then between your landlord and the subtenant or between you, the major tenant, and the subtenant?
A subtenant agreement is between the master tenant and the subtenant.
I see.
The master tenant steps into the shoes of the landlord as to their subtenant.
Okay.
And it's best to have those things spelled out. You know, if you are a master tenant and, you know, you have very early days, you're a nurse and you go to work at 5 o'clock in the morning, so you get up at 3, and you need people to be quiet at, you know, 8, 9, and 10 o'clock at night so that you can sleep. That needs to be in your contract,
sure,
in your rules.
Sure,
you know, if you don't have them spelled out, then it's going to come down to, you know, if there's some problem, what was the agreement?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes you can find information, you can build information mm-hmm. from emails or texts, but it's mm-hmm. best to have one central agreement. And that subtenant agreement should also say that the subtenant is obligated to follow the rules that the landlord sets for you, the master tenant.
Now, if for example, we have a situation where there may be a subtenancy, as far as your practice in San Francisco, is it a normal thing in most landlord-tenant agreements today that there's a provision there that talks about subtenant rentals?
The more or less standard San Francisco rental agreement does have a section on subtenancy, mm-hmm. and it has an alternate one that either it's not permitted without the landlord's permission at all. Permitted at all, or it is, you know, you have to go through the landlord the procedure to apply for them. You know, and the local San Francisco rent ordinance has specific restrictions on or time frames for how long the landlord has to answer, and if he doesn't respond, then they're...
Then what can you do? Okay.
Well,
you know, let me just add
please,
in...
Tad, please.
I want to ask a question to Jessica.
Sure.
Chuck, and you as well, but...
Yeah.
So, you know, the lease may say what it says, and everybody agrees to that on the front end, and as we know how these things sometimes play out, is that then it rolls into a month-to-month, and then a girlfriend or a boyfriend or a husband or a wife moves in, then there's a baby, then an uncle comes to visit, and the next thing you know, you've got a house of folks you don't know, or you could, and there may be an illegal sublet, there may have been a waiver and acquiescence, so I'm questioning, and I often advise clients on this and is an answer, but I question, how does one enforce it? And I say, look, do routine be diligent, you know, be active, don't be a vacant landlord or property owner. And I wonder what your thoughts are on that, Jessica, if you've come across any of that.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I mean, a landlord should be aware of what's going on their property. And while in general, landlords have to be careful about entering for improper purposes. You know, routine, like an annual inspection or something like that. If that's in your lease, your original lease with the master tenant or with the tenants, then that is appropriate for you to come in regularly, you know, once a year and see who's there, see what...
What else can they do besides that? I mean, hire a PI. Do surveillance.
By PI, you mean a private investigator?
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about not insignificant property values and rental monies throughout the greater San Francisco Bay Area. So, I mean, to spend the money for if you think something's going on or you don't, I don't know. It's difficult. It's difficult. So I'm wondering if you had any experience or thoughts there, too.
Well, I know that a number of the landlord side, strictly landlord side attorneys in San Francisco do actually hire private investigators or advise their clients.
To go by and observe what's going on? Is that the
sure.
idea?
Sure. Or, yeah. you know, if install security cameras. I mean, security is always an issue anyway.
That's
so, you know, install security cameras. You just can't have them pointing directly at, like, one person's door. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to be general, like in the hallway or whatever.
So, you can't just put it into the apartment
or
whatever.
You can't
too bad,
target. Right. You can't target, you know, apartment 1B, but you can put it down the hallway and see what you see.
And then you see a whole crowd of people coming in, going into apartment 1B. All right. Would you, before we turn to Tad to talk a little bit about Airbnb, a couple of things going on. What's going on? It's always been my experience in doing these programs that security deposits are always fraught with problems. What do you find, Jessica, about it?
It's absolutely true. Under state law, security deposits have to be returned to a vacating tenant within 21 calendar days after they turn in their keys and vacate the unit. And that applies to landlords and to master tenants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's been a purchase then of the property or a transfer of the property, then that security deposit is supposed to go to the new owner.
Uh-huh.
And the new owner's the one who's responsible for the person who's leaving to return that deposit. A lot, you know, landlords are not supposed to deduct for ordinary wear and tear, but, you know, for extraordinary expenses. And they're supposed to provide backup information, things like receipts, invoices, estimates if you can't get the work done, you know, things like that, so that an itemization of what they're deducting.
If there's something that the landlord is going to charge the tenant for, And
sure.
take it out of the security deposit. Is that correct?
Right. So if if the landlord goes in after the tenant vacates and finds out that, you know, their sliding closet doors are pulled off and they have to get a handyman in to come in and take care of that, or, you know, have to have somebody else come in and reinstall tracks, you need receipts for all of that. That's a legitimate deduction, but, you know, you need to have the receipts.
If a landlord does not return a security deposit in a timely fashion within 21 days, or if a landlord deducts a certain amount from the security deposit or withholds a certain amount without proper documentation of I've spent this for the sliding doors, et cetera, what kind of penalty is there under California law for that?
Well, the tenant can file a small claims action against the landlord, and if the judge in the small claims action finds that the landlord withheld the money in bad faith for bad reasons, then there is a potential punitive damage penalty of up to two times the security deposit.
Oh, really? So if you're paying, and I'm sure security deposits today are not minimal, certainly in San Francisco.
No, state law allows landlords to charge up to 2 months' rent for an unfurnished apartment or 3 months' rent for a furnished apartment. So if you're talking, you know, an apartment that's $2,000, that's $4,000 for
that, that would be a security deposit?
Potentially.
Wow. Yeah. All right, everybody. Hold on, Todd. We're going to – I want to give the in about 5 minutes, everybody, I'm going to invite you to call in and speak to my guests on the air. And that toll-free number – by the way, we're doing this program live on November 30th, 866-798-8255. And we are having our Call a Lawyer night, and we have attorneys here at the station. That number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. If you want to speak with Alice O'Sullivan about workers' compensation law, she has her own number. She'll be available until 8 p.m. Pacific time. That's tonight, November 30th. That's 510-333-3314. 510-333-3314. For attorneys here at the station, it's 1-800-525-9917. Criminal law, Jeff Hayden. Tax law, real estate law, Frank Adam. Patent law, aviation law, lemon law, BBB arbitration, Ron Rohde. Now, let me turn to you, if you would, Todd. Airbnb, this is a big thing that's becoming bigger and bigger. It's not only in California, it's national, it's now becoming international. What is the latest that you feel? I know currently in San Francisco there's been an ordinance changing how many days that you are allowed to be a host with respect to Airbnb. What's the current situation?
Yeah, thanks, Chuck. You know, the state of the nation is always changing with respect to Airbnb. I think there is it's as nimble as the company itself and the users. I was just reading that they have 200 countries, millions of listings, 2 million listings in 200 countries, and that they're in litigation, you know, I don't know in how many, but in a handful. And right here in San Francisco is kind of the orb, and it tends
because to Airbnb has its major office in San Francisco, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there are it has a very strong presence in the community, in the revitalization of parts of San Francisco that have been historically downtrodden, and there are a lot of people employed there and using the company, and so it is a focal point for San Francisco lawmakers and users, and then internationally, well, nationally and then internationally. Everyone looks here kind of first on it. So it's pretty groundbreaking, whatever's done, at least how that's perceived. Everything is suggested to have a ripple effect. The most recent news is, like you mentioned, Chuck, it's a rollback by the Board of Supervisors in a 6-2 vote recently in the later part of November. And I don't think I've read or seen that Mayor Lee has vetoed it to roll back the number of days per calendar year to 60. Now, that might even be a hard cap, even if you're there. I think a natural reaction would be, well, how can you tell me who I can have over as a guest at my house, government, or anyone? And I think that's, I'm with that.
You think it's a constitutional challenge?
Well, I do. I don't want to get political here, especially at this time of our nation. But,
why not? Chad?
We had a water protest down here on California Street. So we're always energized here in the city.
Oh my. Let me throw something to you, because I have not used Airbnb, and but it seems to me that I remember one of the programs that I've done recently, and I don't think you were a guest. One of the listeners called in to say that she had used Airbnb, and the place she had gone to that had been recommended by Airbnb. I believe it was Airbnb. I don't want to knock them, but and it wouldn't have been their problem on this. She went there, and she went into the place. She paid her money, I believe, to Airbnb as a down payment or whatever, however it works. But there was dog feces in the place.
Yeah.
So my question to you is this. If someone's going to use Airbnb, and I know there are a couple, you can use Craigslist, and there's something Home Alone or whatever it's called. But if you're going to use a service like this, which is on the Internet, to rent somewhere, whether it's in California or some other state or perhaps internationally, what's the situation of the average consumer, assuming you're not a lawyer, and even for a lawyer, I think you should do this. What's the potential for a consumer doing some kind of research to make sure, well, I've been recommended by this Internet service, whether it's Airbnb or whatever, to go to this place? How can someone do some research to determine what kind of reaction other consumers who may have stayed there are saying about this?
Well, I think that's one of the biggest promotional points of Airbnb and others in its space, is that it's self-regulating, if you will, by its users. So the review platform that it really largely operates upon in terms of prior stays and comments, both for guests and hosts, that's where you can get some information. And I wouldn't, by any means, any circumstance, stop there. I would go to all the competitor websites, not to promote any over others, but TripAdvisor is very helpful. And there are others out there. Home Away, which is what you referred to as Home Alone.
Home Away. Okay, pardon me.
VRBO, Vacation Rental by Owner.
Oh, really? So there are a lot of them out there.
Yeah, there are, and there's Google reviews as well. And then you can go to your social network, which is your Facebook friends. And then I would really do, you know, what works is the old-fashioned way, is pick up the phone and see if you know somebody nearby and see what's going on in the community.
I see. Okay. Well, that's very good. Well, let's do this. There are a number of people, or at least so far, a couple of people who would like to talk with you. Let's start with Patricia. Patricia, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you, Chuck. I have a question. I moved into a house a few years ago that has a cottage, and I was told that it wasn't a place that I could rent legally. It's been used as a studio. It's basically a big room with a bathroom. It has no kitchen. I was thinking of considering renting it.
So in other words, Patricia, if I may interrupt for a moment, you rented some rental property, and so you're...
No, I own the...
Sorry. You own it, and that on your property is this additional structure which you referred to as a cottage. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Go ahead. Please, finish your comment, your question.
I wanted to consider renting it. I was told when I first bought the house by the previous owners, be very careful, your neighbors are very fussy, don't get a lot of attention to it, and because they'll create trouble for you if you ever try to rent it.
Now, Patricia, you're in San Francisco, is that right?
I am, and I don't know whether you're to dare rent it, especially now when housing is difficult here. I would like to be able to benefit.
Okay,
from
let me get some comments from my guests on this. And also, I take it, Patricia, before you turn your radio back on, you have not contacted any attorney to find out what your legal rights may be. Have you at this point, or have you?
No, I haven't. It hadn't occurred to me.
Okay, all right. But you live in San Francisco.
I do.
Okay, turn your radio back on. You know, I'm a real believer, everybody, in because I've been doing lawyer stuff in this program for 32 years, but I've been a lawyer much longer, and I'm a consumer advocate. I'm a real believer in people, when they have an issue that they're not sure about, of contacting your local bar association in California. Every county has a bar association, a lawyer referral service, and they'll do their best to find someone who has some knowledge about this. And with minor exception, for a half an hour consultation, you'll pay $25 to $35. It's a great thing. But let me, Jessica, what comments do you have for Patricia on this? She lives in San Francisco. I guess there must be some kind of an ordinance that says if you have a cottage on your property, you can't rent it. I'm not sure. But what do you say?
Well, the question is whether it complies with basic housing laws,
yes,
and
yes.
Which are both state and local. And I think a place that has no kitchen probably is not going to be compliant.
Mm-hmm.
It's a planning department question, really, on whether that can become compliant, if there's something that you can do to add and bring it into compliance. Also, in San Francisco, there's a local rent ordinance. So if the property existed in 1979, whether or not you owned it, and you want to rent out this unit, you're going to run into your rent control rules. You're going to be limited as a landlord on how much you can raise the rent every year. And only one rental increase in a year. You're going to be also limited on ability to evict. Mm-hmm. You know, in most of the state, a landlord can evict for any or no reason, as long as it's not harassment or discrimination or retaliation or something like that. But in San Francisco and in other rent-controlled areas like Oakland and Berkeley, and there are rules about limiting you to what you can evict for, and to have those just cause evictions is very difficult. So if you're going to be a landlord in San Francisco, I would recommend strongly that you talk to an attorney. Take that time to have that half hour and sit down with them and find out what you're going to be saddled with.
Todd, did I hear you? Ted, did you say something? Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with everything Jessica said. And it's my understanding as well that and I'm not trying to dissuade the caller, Patricia, I think it is, from monetizing your property. I think that's a wise thing to do and evaluate it. But if you rent out a quote-unquote illegal unit, it's my understanding you could be forced to give back all the rent money that you collected and more money on top of it, and disgorge it or return it. So that's another.
Patricia, I would recommend this to you. Since you're in San Francisco, I think it is worth it for you, since obviously probably your property is worth quite a bit of money. And I think it's worth it for you to do some initial inquiry with an attorney who handles landlord-tenant law. And I would suggest you might want to contact the lawyer referral service for the San Francisco bar, and I'll give that phone number in just a few minutes. But I think it would be worth it for you to consider initially spending, I think it may be $35 for a half an hour consultation with a landlord-tenant attorney who represents landlords. I think you should do it. And so that's my assignment for you, Patricia. Don't be scared. Don't be hesitant. It may well be a very worthwhile investment and may in the future be a nice way for you to make some extra money. But I think it's important now that you do this. Let's take, while we're still doing the statewide program, which is the first half hour, we'll take one more call. And this is RJ. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, thank you for the program tonight.
You're welcome. Go ahead, RJ.
Okay, I live in San Francisco in a federally subsidized apartment. It's an SRO, and it's through the federal program called Shelter Plus Care. So I pay 30% of my disability income for this unit. Now, I'm afraid that once Donald Trump comes in, he's going to cut off federal funding for sanctuary cities.
Oh my.
And where would that leave someone such as me and others that have federally subsidized rental units?
This is a major, major issue. Let me get Tad to respond to this, because this is something that I think probably takes more than just a couple of minutes on my radio program. But turn your radio back up, RJ, and let me get Tad to respond to this. Tad, I know that you are not a specialist in subsidized housing, but I know you are somewhat knowledgeable. What comments do you have for RJ?
Yeah, thanks, Chuck. RJ, I think you're wise to anticipate that there could be some changes and be ahead of the curve on that. So my hat's off to you in that respect. And I'm sure others out there have a similar question or concern, and if they don't know it, they may not even know it yet. I think it's really wise for you to, like Chuck said for the last caller, I think you need to get some counsel. I think you need to get some information about what your rights are. I think it's a bit of an unknown because we don't know what's going to happen, but rather than wait for the other shoe to drop, I think you go and talk with some folks. From my research, you can talk with the Tenants' Rights Union of San Francisco, and they'll refer you if they can't advise you.
That's the name of the organization, Tenants' Rights Union?
Yeah, there's the San Francisco Tenants' Union.
Okay.
And then there, I'm looking at their website, and there they will refer you to the Housing Rights Committee of San Francisco, which is on Mission Street.
I hope you're writing this down, RJ. Housing Rights Committee?
Yeah, the Housing Rights Committee of San Francisco. I have no affiliation with them. I think it's wise to do that. There are other outfits. There are other resources as well. There are self-help clinics at the courthouse. There's Eviction Defense Council and some others. But you do have protections. There are rules that are in place that already protect you, both federally and locally. But I think it's wise to go ahead and see what you can obtain from consultation there, or contact the Bar Association.
Yeah, and again, the Bar Association, since obviously, RJ, you also live, at least I understand, in San Francisco, you should contact, if you want to, the San Francisco Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service. And I think wherever you may be, those of you who are listening to this program, whether you're listening to it with us live tonight on November 30th or you get the program delayed, which actually we send the program out to 15 other stations in California that will air the first half hour actually next week. In your county, wherever you are, there's a bar association for the county, a lawyer referral, call your own. If you have a legal problem, find out. They'll tell you if they have someone who they can set up an appointment for you with for half an hour consultation. And statewide, it's something like $25 to $35. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service. Okay, everybody, it's California time. We're doing this program live on Wednesday, November 30th. It's at 7:29 and a few seconds after that. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. I've got a couple of very knowledgeable people with me. Tad Devlin has been a guest on this program before, and he is a business and sharing economy attorney. He's a partner in the San Francisco law firm of Kaufman, Dolowitz, and Valk. And Jessica Chilek is a very experienced landlord-tenant attorney. Her office is in San Francisco. If you would like to talk with them on the air, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. It's also our Call a Lawyer night. We don't have a full house tonight, unfortunately. I don't know if people are still trying to recover from Thanksgiving. But until 8 p.m. Pacific time, this is tonight, November 30th, Alice O'Sullivan, who's a certified specialist in workers' compensation law, will be taking your calls at area code 510-333-3314, 510-333-3314. At the station here, KLW in San Francisco, Jeff Hayden, who is a certified specialist in criminal law, and he's also chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization. Jeff is here. We also have here Frank Adam, who is a tax lawyer, real estate lawyer. He's also a real estate broker. And we also have here Ron Rohde, who's a patent attorney, aviation lawyer. He's a Lemon Law attorney and also BBB arbitration. The three of them are here, and that number, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. This is not by any means an obligation on your part. It's a public service these attorneys are performing, so there's no obligation, no charge. This is they're performing this public service for you. And tomorrow, Thursday, December 1st, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available from 9 to 11 a.m. That's tomorrow, Thursday, December 1st, 9 to 11 a.m. Here's the number if you'd like to jot that down, 818-470-1099, 818-470-1099. Now, one of the things that I want to mention to you, everyone, is we do our best to try to give you some insight into the laws to help you with a problem or something like that. It's always wise when we're doing this program if you have a piece of paper and a pen or pencil and you can write something down, because that's something that hopefully will be helpful to you if you do have a problem. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. And for a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services of the San Francisco Bar, here's the number, 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. That number is 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. And certainly if you're in any other county in California, every county, as I said before, has a Bar Association and lawyer referral service you can call your own during normal business hours. And with minor exception, throughout the state of California, for half an hour consultation, you'll be charged $25 to $35. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep the service going. It's a very fine service. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, and the California Applicants Attorneys Association. So let me give you our toll-free number again for my guests on the air. It's 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And again, also for Call a Lawyer Night, that number, 1-800-525-9917. And one of the things that I wanted to make sure that we talked about was that, you know, Ted, we were going to talk a little bit about subsidized housing and vouchers. And we got this call earlier from one of the listeners. What is the money that the voucher is coming from is federal money, is it not?
It is, Chuck, yeah. And it's guaranteed money, if you will, as long as you remain in compliance. So there's incentives on all sides to keep the relationship in place.
In that subsidized housing is funded by the federal government, at least a portion of it with a voucher. What is the obligation of whomever the landlord is to comply with local law, such as the rent board, for example?
Yeah, so the landlord's got more more requirements. There are more rules in place. So when you've got the voucher situation, not only is the are you subjected to California and local law, but then you've got federal oversight as well. So it is a bit more layered, but the tax incentives, it's my understanding, would be quite significant, and the guaranteed income. And then on the tenant side, or the renter side, there's equal important points as well, meaning you want to maintain your vouchers, you want to keep your housing in good stead. And I think the best way for all parties, and this is not just in a subsidized housing situation, is transparency and documentation. If there's an issue with your unit, if there's an issue with your tenant, if there's an issue with your neighbor, document it. We've got these phones now that take pictures. If you've got a leaky pipe or a leaky window or whatever the case may be, you can pretty simply take a picture of it and communicate that rather than wait on it and it turns into a situation where it becomes not an issue but a dispute.
All right, very good. Here's a question, by the way. I want to encourage those of you out there, tenants, landlords, if you do have a question, please don't hesitate to call in. We're doing this program live. The Call a Lawyer Night is also live. This is Wednesday, November 30th. The toll-free number for On the Air is 866-798-8255. For Call a Lawyer, it's 1-800-525-9917. And if you have questions about workers' compensation law, Alice O'Sullivan has her own number, and she'll be available till 8 p.m. Pacific time tonight, and that's 510-333-3314. Here's a question that came in from a listener, and it's this. And this one is really focusing on you, Tad. How is Airbnb, B&B stands for bed and breakfast, how is Airbnb held accountable if a renter is dissatisfied and wants his money back? If the renter is out of state, does he need to return to California to file a small claims action? So let's say you're in Utah and you've used Airbnb through the internet and you're not happy with whatever it was. Maybe there was a problem, no hot water when you rented this place, wherever it might be, and this person is wondering, do I have to come to California to bring an action against Airbnb, since Airbnb has its principal office in San Francisco? Tad, what do you have to say?
Well, I want to say let's try to avoid the lawsuit, right?
So I agree with you. Let's do that.
let's not jump to the courthouse. But yeah, that could be a result. But I would try the internal mechanisms. They've got a dispute resolution, forum within their platform. And
you're saying Airbnb does?
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
I think that it's been my experience and both personal and professional, and understanding that they have really, really made extra efforts to work with the public on issues like these, because that's their constituents, right? So it's a review-based company, or a review-driven company, I should say. And their public policy and public perception is very important, and that they've gone a long way towards doing the right thing. So what happens if that doesn't work out? It's my understanding, you're not necessarily required. It's a venue question, so you're not necessarily required to come back to California to sue them. I mean, I'm not sure under the hypothetical, if your space that you rented was in San Francisco, Airbnb might have a pretty good argument that the lawsuit should take place here. But there are some provisions under the venue statute that would allow the aggrieved party to take the issue up in their home state as well.
Is there, Tad, now with using Airbnb as the example, does the potential renter have to enter into a written agreement with Airbnb if the renter is going to accept Airbnb assignment? We've found for you this place on such and such a street in Utah or whatever it is. Is there a written agreement that the potential renter has to enter into with Airbnb?
It's not a contract with Airbnb. They have a user agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that is a contract, but it's not a contractual relationship whereby you're in privity with Airbnb for purposes of the space. You end up in privity with for a traditional lease type of scenario with the host, and even some hosts will take the extra step of providing a written rental agreement to the guest, so that your contract is with the host, the person, as opposed to with the Airbnb enterprise.
Are you finding with the contract or the tenant's agreement between the host and the tenant that they are now incorporating into that written agreement a provision for arbitration, as opposed to your being able to go perhaps to the local small claims court, wherever it may be? Or do you know?
No, I do know. I do know from my experience. Yeah, Chuck, you bring up a good point. The public picks up, the trends and the news, and what now is trending is arbitration. It's in the news, legal news.
It certainly is.
A lot.
Yeah.
I don't know. We could have another program on which is a better forum, the courthouse or an arbitration forum. What happens, I think, is folks glom onto other agreements, or they go online to LegalZoom. So yeah, it happens. You see that in there. Okay. Whether or not that arbitration provision is enforceable is another can of legal worms. So
everybody has to be careful, no matter what. You want to research, if you're going to use Airbnb or one of these other internet services, what the place is that they assigned you to have your vacation, and be careful that you don't get yourself into more hot water than you want to be. Now, our next caller is Kelly, and it says here Kelly is in Seattle. Are you in Seattle, Kelly?
Yes, sir.
No kidding. Well, nice. Well, welcome to California.
Oh, thanks. I'm a California native, so I tend to follow the news there.
Okay. Well, what question do you have or comment?
So I am a landlord.
Mm-hmm.
My folks own 4 properties. So being a landlord and working in real estate is very central in my family, if you will. And one of the topics that I thought would be of interest would be service animals versus rental housing, responsibilities of a landlord. Two different questions. The first one would be, so I charge a fee to bring an animal into the home.
Yeah, a service animal, is that correct?
Well, any animal.
Any animal, okay.
I haven't had the direct experience of a service animal in just the way it's rolled out for me personally as a landlord.
Yeah.
However, I have found it's easier and easier and easier to get your animal certified, if you will, for a variety of different areas to be a service animal. And so I have concerns as a landlord that... There's a cross marker there. I tend to have my choice in tenants because I allow a dog, but I've also had I've had it happen on several occasions where the dog does a fair amount of damage. And so it's a double-edged, situation, if you will.
Your property that you are the landlord for, is that property in California or is it in Seattle?
The 4 that my parents have are in California.
Uh-huh.
The one that I have is in Seattle. So I realize that the law will vary to some degree by city.
Well, let me get some comments for you from my guests with respect to at least a California property.
Absolutely.
And I appreciate your calling. Very nice to hear from you, Kelly.
Thank you.
If you'll turn your radio back up, hopefully we'll have something that will give you some direction. Jessica, if you would start, please.
Yes, thank you, Chuck. As far as service animals go, certain service animals are, necessary, like trained guide dogs, seeing eye dogs.
Yes.
And those that are necessary for the person's ability to get along in life generally are permitted in most units. There are other kinds of animals, such as comfort animals, that are certified in San Francisco specifically, but also in other parts mm-hmm. of California. That's if a person needs emotional support. Mm-hmm. You know, they suffer from depression, and, sure. and the animal sure. helps them, yeah. you know, stay up in life or whatever. And they are not as protected under federal law, mm-hmm. like the Americans with Disabilities Act, as the mm-hmm. seeing eye dogs are, or certain other service animals. Most service animals who are certified must be well-trained.
Mm-hmm.
And so you shouldn't have too much trouble with those animals. The comfort animals are the ones where I've found there's more problem because there's no training requirement for them.
If an animal is a service animal and there's no issue, it's not a comfort animal but a service animal, and under the Americans with Disabilities Act, this is something that someone has a right to have on a property.
Can it's a reasonable accommodation of their disability.
Yes. Is the landlord permitted to charge an extra fee for that service animal, or is that under the ADA not permitted, since obviously it is essential that this person who needs a service animal has the service animal with him or her?
For the certified service animals, generally additional charges are not allowed because it is...
That's under the ADA, Americans
right.
with Disabilities Act, I
Well,
see.
It's also under, you know, the way that California interprets
yes.
ADA application,
yes.
and California also
yeah.
has its own laws.
Yes.
My experience with that is that most of the time additional fees are not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
There may be times when they are. There might be a smaller mm-hmm. security, like a pet deposit, but it won't be a full month's rent or
yeah.
something like that.
Yeah.
And if the animal does actually cause problems, you know, then there are things that can be done. You know, there can be behavior requirements or whatever. And the even with service animals,
mm-hmm.
you know, service
mm-hmm.
animals may very well be trained to be quiet and unobtrusive and to, you know,
sure.
Use restroom facilities on command
mm-hmm.
so that, you know,
mm-hmm.
they're not, you know, and otherwise to be non-intrusive
mm-hmm.
And not damage property. The problem that I've seen is more with the comfort animals, which is... Not that the person doesn't need them, because they certainly do, but there are less restrictions and rules about the training, and therefore, mm. you know, then the training issue becomes
mm-hmm.
the big problem. You know, if you don't teach your animal, it's like any animal. If you don't teach your pet or your comfort animal to sit, to be quiet, to not bark, you know, all the time, you know, basic things like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Then you have that's where
that's a real problem.
That's when
problem.
The problems come up. You know, if there's a mm-hmm. comfort animal that barks all night or that scratches up furniture, if it's a cat or you know
sure.
something like that.
Ted, do you have any comments for Kelly on this?
Well, I think you want to make sure that you're aware of local, state, and potentially federal law on these issues. Like Jessica was mentioning, there's different ADA requirements both in federal and on a state level. And I think the last thing you want to do, because I've had this come across my desk, and it doesn't sound like you would go anywhere near this, is be accused of engaging in discrimination against
yeah.
somebody
mm-hmm.
who requires a service pet, you know, whatever, a dog, cat, or I had a case with a service parrot, believe it or not. So, yeah, I would just make sure that, you know, whatever you do is above board and I mean, I hate to use a fair, so that you can avoid that.
You know, one of the things that I think is important, and in doing this program for so many years as I have found that at least some of the callers who state that they are landlords and have property and they would ask a question that makes some sense, I will ask them from time to time, do you have a lawyer who you've gotten any advice? No, I don't. I think it is very important, and it is a proper deductible item on your tax return, if you report your income, you know, I mean, let's face what we're doing here. But if you report your income, and you are using a lawyer and paying a lawyer for advice, it is a proper business expense. And so, my feeling is that if you are a landlord and have questions like this, at the very least, get some basic information, whether it's through your lawyer referral service of the county bar or wherever you may be. Here's another question for you. And by the way, let me just thank, before I give you this question, I want to thank very much Ron Rohde, who is here for patent law, aviation law, lemon law, BBB arbitration. Ron's been a great supporter of what we're doing. Frank Adam, the same. Tax law, real estate. He's also a real estate broker. And, of course, Jeff Hayden, criminal law. Jeff is now the chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization. And if you want to talk with them, they'll be here for another few minutes. We're doing this program live on November 30th. It's 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. And if you have questions on workers' compensation law, Alice O'Sullivan will be available for a few more minutes at her phone number, 510-333-3314. 510-333-3314. We'll have time now for another call or two for those of you who would like to call in on the air. It's 866-798-8255. That's toll free. Now, here's a question. And this caller asked this: why in ads, ADS, seen hereabouts, do rental agents specify, quote, no Section 8, end quotes, or, quote, Section 8 need not apply, end quotes? Tad, do you have any thoughts on that?
I've seen that as well. I think it could raise an alarm. It could raise a bell. But at the same time, I think that the position that the ad is taking is that, look, there is housing set up for that. There are specific segments of the community that have subsidized housing, and thus we're not taking away from the housing stock by limiting to non-Section 8 applicants. They don't get any federal funding for doing that, and so therefore they're allowed to remove those from the potential tenant pool.
So this is not, if an ad says no Section 8, they're referring to the potential renter. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe so, yes.
So by doing that, they are not violating some kind of either state law or federal law. Is that right?
Not that I'm aware of.
Mm.
No,
okay.
I don't believe that economic status is as protected as things like gender
okay.
or sexual orientation.
All right, so that answers that one. And apparently someone has said, what's the date for call a lawyer in December? My goodness, we're really getting ready. Well, at this point, folks, I'm thinking that it'll probably be the last Wednesday of December, which is December 28th, in case this is something that you are interested in. If I change it and it becomes the 21st, I'll certainly give you plenty of notice on that. We have another caller, and that's Dao. Have I pronounced your name correctly, Dao?
Yes, it's correctly.
Okay, go ahead. What is your question?
This question is about real estate. Actually, my question is, my ex-husband is going to leave my daughters a lot of, houses and all that, altogether like 4, 5, 6 houses here and in New Mexico. Will she have to pay any taxes on anything like this?
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a this is Tad. That might be a legal hybrid CPA question.
I think so.
Yeah.
And now let me just tell you, one of the attorneys who's for call a lawyer, and I'll give you that number, and he'll still be here, and I'm sure he'll be happy to talk with you. That's Frank Adam. Frank Adam is a CPA. He's a tax lawyer. I would suggest that you call 1-800-525-9917 and ask to speak to Frank Adam and ask him that question. It's 1-800-525-9917. That's right. Yeah. So hang up now and call quickly because When Frank leaves here, he's kind of, he gets in his car and the tires squeal as he takes off. So thank you very much for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care, Dow. All right, we have time for Mike. Mike, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Mike, are you there? Hello, Mike.
My question for you.
Okay.
Is I reside in an SRO in the city and county of San Francisco.
SRO is what?
A single room occupancy hotel subsidized housing.
Okay, good.
My friend lost his ID yesterday, and the manager of the building is refusing to allow him to come to my residence.
Oh my.
Can he legally do that?
Wow. Wow.
And they've seen his ID at least 100 times and recorded it.
So
his wallet was stolen, and they're saying he can't come to my home.
And but he's been in your home before, is that correct?
Oh, yeah, 100 times.
And has he reported his ID stolen to the police, or has he?
I believe so, and he's in the process of getting a new one at the Department of Motor Vehicles.
Okay, and you are in San Francisco, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
All right, let me get a comment from Tad on this. Turn your radio back up, if you would, Mike. Thanks for calling. Tad, do you have some thoughts for Mike?
I'm sorry. Can you, Chuck, what's the issue? I'm sorry?
The issue is a friend of his who generally visits him at this SRO subsidized housing, has his ID was stolen, and they won't let him in the building to be with Mike. He's been there before, and Mike wonders, is that something that the management of the SRO can do?
Well, they are doing it. I don't know if it's righteous. I think you could try to meet in the middle and come up with an alternative form of identification and see if you can get something. Maybe you can vouch for the gentleman, or others there can, or somebody can prove who he is and that he's not been an issue in the community and at your place, and see if you can get a workaround. I mean, what you should do at a minimum is contact management, and then perhaps put a letter to them backing up what you've said and request a meeting so you can kind of put this to rest. That's what
we have actually run out of time. I want to thank you both very much for joining me on the program. Jessica Charlick, landlord tenant attorney with office in San Francisco, and Tad Devlin, business and sharing economy attorney, partner in the San Francisco law firm of Kaufman, Dolowitz & Volokh. Thanks very much for joining us. Great to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck.
Next time on Your Legal Rights, we're going to be discussing abuse of older persons at elder care facilities and the use of litigation and estate planning for these persons. My guest will be Peter Stern, certified specialist in estate planning, care facility litigation attorneys Anne Marie Murphy, Catherine Stebner, and Peter Lomhoff, and California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform attorney Prescott Cole. That's next time on this program. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for this program is made possible by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio transmission of the program for national distribution. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the San Mateo County Bar Association. And I hope all of you try to make use of your local Bar Association lawyer referral service if you have some kind of a problem. And I thank you for listening to us on Your Legal Rights. And I hope you join us next week when we'll be doing that next program on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.